This is Believe in Banking, a podcast series for decision makers, influencers, and leaders, featuring experts taking on the financial industry's most pressing issues with insight and empathy. The podcast features information and conversations designed to enlighten and empower. Here are your Believe in Banking hosts, Sean Keithley and Gina Bleedorn.
Welcome to our podcast for Believe in Banking. This is Sean Keithley, President and CEO of Adrenaline.
And I'm Gina Bleedorn, Chief Experience Officer at Adrenaline.
Gina, I'm excited about today's episode. We have a star guest today. Mr. Todd Nagel is President and CEO of Incredible Bank. Todd, welcome to our podcast.
Hey, thanks for letting me join you guys today.
We are delighted to have you on, and our listeners are going to really enjoy your story. I know it. If you don't mind, I mean, Incredible Bank has a bit of a unique origin. Would you mind introducing yourself and just talking about the inception, your style as a CEO, going against the grain a little bit, and just talk a little bit about the bank and your roots and where things are headed?
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm Todd Nagel. I'm the president and CEO of now Incredible Bank. I think we do have an interesting story. We actually started as a community bank in 1967, which just happens to be the year I was born. Obviously, I wasn't with the bank at that time, but that'll give my age. And interesting enough, it was purchased by a farmer, Ron Nicholas, who is the patriarch, if you will, of our company, and is now owned, fast forward, by his two sons in their 50s. And we are a unique company. We're about $1.7 billion in assets today, with only two shareholders, which I think is unique in banking and unique for a bank our size. But we started off as a small community bank, just with one branch. And fast forward to today, we have 15 branch locations, and then also a rather large national presence. And really, the national presence came around in about 2007. We were thinking about how do we increase our funding on a national basis, because loan demand was so great. And of course, that happened just before the big real estate crash. So, you know, the Reader's Digest version is we started an internet-only bank called IncredibleBank.com in 2008, 2009. But our original bank, our mothership, if you will, was called River Valley State Bank. And just 2 years ago, we combined our River Valley State Bank brand with our IncredibleBank.com brand. And Incredible Bank was the surviving name. So that's a real, real fast story of our history.
With that name, Todd, I don't think anyone that hears the name Incredible Bank would not want to know more about the bank. It's such a bold statement and promise. And then if you look at the way it looks, even the identity seems to carry with it this big promise of something different. You've been featured all over the place regarding what you've done. But how do you live up to that name? How do you deliver on Incredible Bank?
Well, it's a great question. And it's one, believe it or not, we don't take lightly. I mean, if you're going to call yourself Incredible Bank, you're really putting yourself out there. And you need to have a great sense of humor, but you have to take it very seriously, because it certainly opens you up to all kinds of criticism. And we knew that going into it. We actually chose the name through a really long, long story, but our old CEO 1 year dressed up like Mr. Incredibanker. And so how we came up with IncredibleBank.com was really watching him. And he actually looks just like the character on the movie, which made it even more fun, of course. So it really all started in fun. And on a serious note, we try to bring that theme through it. We just don't take ourselves too serious. We try to work hard and have more fun than we work, which is really neat. But we have a customer service model that is also a trademark that we call the Incredible Customer Experience, or ICE. We're now in playbook version number 5, the rough drafts on my desk right now. And we train every single employee that comes to work at Incredible Bank when they're a new employee. And then we do repetitive training every year to make sure that all of our employees live up to our minimum customer standards. And you know, we say things to people like, they'll say, Todd, that wasn't an incredible experience. We'll say, you know what, you're exactly right, but we're going to work on making this an incredible experience. So we don't try to be something we're not. We know that we're mere mortals, but we really are focusing on the experience. And banking is about as boring as it gets, and checking accounts are about as boring as it gets when it comes to products, right? I don't know how you make a checking account sexy, but you can certainly create an incredible customer experience, and you can certainly make people feel good. That's what we're about.
Well, it's remarkable because we do hear a lot from community organizations that the people are what makes them stand out. But we have not met organizations that take it to heart like you do. And I think it is a balance between being bold and not taking yourself too seriously. And I think both that and your digital background, I'm thinking both those things perhaps prepared you for this last year that no one saw coming. So maybe talk a little bit about that, just the commitment and the culture and how every single person believes in the bank, but also your digital launch, you know, full decade ago. How did that dual strategy put you in a position to succeed in the last year with all the headwinds of COVID and the challenges that your communities you serve faced?
Yeah, certainly the timing couldn't be better for the launch of a pandemic, as ridiculous as that sounds. Because, you know, like the military, we had to mobilize our entire workforce. And luckily, we had a good portion of our workforce that was digital first, that was leaning digital first, however, trying to create an incredible customer experience. So our secret sauce is we actually answer the phone and talk to people and call you back. And we have a standard that we have to call you back by the end of the day, no matter, you know, and that's 11:59 at night if it has to be. But we were set up very nicely having incrediblebank.com and being able to open up accounts online unassisted by people. That definitely helped us. And then, of course, when PPP came around, we literally had to set that product up overnight. And we were ready to go before the big banks. I love picking on big banks just because it's easy. And we love competing against big banks because it's easy. And when we set up PPP, you know, we actually had customers from larger banks that we had been prospecting for a long time come over to us. And we were able to stand up some technology really quick. And given the size of our company, mobilize really quickly. So I think, you know, having a company that's entrepreneurial and opportunistic and likes to have fun. And we promised everybody right from the start that our goal was to not eliminate jobs. Now, that's a tough promise when you don't know what the future is. But I think that helped our people say, okay, I'm not worried about my job. This isn't something I know, but I'm going to jump in and get started. And, you know, I think we opened something like 1,500 checking accounts online in the first 3 months of the pandemic. And I know for sure we did 2,300 PPP loans, all electronic, because obviously our branches and lobbies were closed. So yes, having the incrediblebank.com platform, being digital first, and then I think also being entrepreneurial helped out a lot.
You have the claim of being the first national online community bank. You were very much ahead of the curve. Many institutions, community institutions, are looking to get more digital. You started digital, but since you chose, in a way, to add the physical branches, what do you think you get from that physical channel, and how do you leverage the physical versus the digital where you started to get the best return, really, from each and give the best experience to customers within each?
It's a great question. Again, I think, you know, having started incrediblebank.com, which was 100% digital, you couldn't go into a branch and open an account because no branches existed. And then having the legacy 50-year-old, you know, River Valley Bank brand, which was brick and mortar, hand-in-hand delivery, certainly was a challenge when we put the two cultures together. However, what's been fun is I remember our mission statement that we came up with in 2019, and it was our 2021 vision, which was 3 years out, and that was to make all our transactional people into digital ambassadors. And I'm paraphrasing that. And so we were talking about being digital ambassadors in our branches in 2018. I think that was, now looking back, that's pretty forward thinking. So our people really have transformed from being very transactional, come in, bring your check, deposit it, to being digital ambassadors. And what that means is we actually help more people with their mobile banking and perhaps set up e-statements than we do actually cash checks, or we help them with their consumer capture, which is taking a picture of your check and depositing on your phone today, than we do actually people coming in and, you know, asking for cash or transferring cash back and forth. So I think that was fun for us to be ahead of the game. It was real fun to take your traditional transactional banker and get them leaning towards the digital side and say, hey, you don't have to abandon talking to customers, opening the door for customers, handing people, customers, a cup of coffee. But if you get this digital, this mobile, this online banking skill set, you can really help customers move forward and cement the relationship. So it was actually very, I don't know if it was well planned, but it was planned out. And so today, how we do that, Gina, is we actually have, let's say, a motorhome customer in Kentucky that's onboarded by a branch in, let's say, Eagle River, Wisconsin. So it's actually branch staff that are onboarding a digital customer in one of our branches. So we're still utilizing the same people who are experts in banking. It's been fun.
That's a incredible, no pun intended, step towards omni-channel delivery that everyone, every bank struggles with, and even retailers struggle with. How many times are you somewhere and you say, I did something online, or I need help with my app, and a banker or even a retail associate says, sorry, go call the number. And you pioneered omni-channel in a way through actual physical training of people. And that makes a lot of sense. And you have done so because you have an incredible, truly customer-centric lens, more so than many and most that we talk to, as far as the extent to which you go to think about the customer first at every turn. Talk about even what happens at the branch when your standards about treating customers inside a branch.
Yeah, again, going back to our playbook, our ICE playbook, which I love to say is version 5.0, 5 years into it, we do things like open the door. One of our standards is we ask our people to open the door for all customers. Now, that seems like it'd be really easy to train, and it seems like it'd be really easy to manage. I can tell you it was the most difficult customer service standard we ever put in for a number of reasons. People like older gentlemen saying, no lady can open the door for me. And so we're like, that's okay. Don't make him mad. You know, let him open the door for you if that's the deal. But we do things like that. All our employees wear their name tags on the right side. We couldn't figure out if it was supposed to be on the right side or left side. So I think we did rock, paper, scissors, and we came up with the right side. But, you know, all our customers or all our employees have a name tag on. All of our employees open the door for all of our customers. All of our employees welcome the customer the same way, and all of our employees in the conversation the same way. We have actual scripts. All voicemails are standardized with their own voice that tells them when they'll be back. So, you know, there's nothing more frustrating to get a voicemail that says, please leave a message, but I don't know where I'm really ever going to call you back. So things like that, which seem really simple, are really hard to deploy, and they're even harder to measure. And really, the only way you can measure them is you have to go and observe. So we've hired secret shoppers to this day. We take a lot of pride on getting customer testimonials or customer reviews back. And our goal is to have at least 30 to 35% returned. Because if you're going to be a customer-centric organization, you have to have that feedback in order to improve the customer experience. But we spend a lot of time. Our brand promise is no bank treats you better. So again, if you're going to have a bold promise like that, you have to be able to prove it out. And we're working every day on trying to improve the digital experience and the in-person experience.
So Todd, one of the things I think is really unique about Incredible Bank, and you've already said it, although you're officially maybe a community-sized bank, you've got this digital first part of you that has made you more of a national player. And you don't really think of community banks or even community credit unions as your competition. So talk to us about this national plan, the overall customer experience, and how you truly do think that these big national players are who you compete against, and thus why you think with a more of a community bank approach to customer service, et cetera, you've got a leg up on these guys.
It really happened out of a problem we had to solve. So, you know, after the real estate crisis and it really hit us in 9, 10, 11, we're a little bit, it happens in the Midwest where it hit us later. I said, if we ever get out of this, I'm not going back. So we decided we needed to diversify our loan portfolio. And of course, in Wisconsin, northern Michigan, it's mostly commercial real estate. So we were searching for what I would call equipment financing. And if we could do it on a national basis, that would be great. If we could do it with the OEM manufacturer, that would be great. And we discovered, you know, this motorhome financing niche. And it just so happened I was passionate about motorhomes. So that's, believe it or not, the short story. What it did for our balance sheet was significantly, you know, diversify our credit risk, but it also opened us up to a whole new customer base on a national basis. And while incrediblebank.com had deposit customers in 50 states, we did not have loan customers in 50 states. So the fun part about it was we discovered these different, I guess they call them niches now, across the United States in the loan and deposit world. And then we support those through our local branches in the different towns, which is fun. And we think the difference is the big banks aren't really concentrating on the retail customer. We feel they concentrate on other forms of income. And that's our main source of income is net interest income and, of course, non-interest income. And so we really want to focus on giving a better customer experience because people forget what you say, but they always remember how you make them feel. And so we just think we can beat the big banks every day. It's really hard to talk to anybody if you call a big bank. Just pick a big bank and dial their 1-800 number and see how long it takes to talk to them. So we give out cell phones and our call center is supposed to answer within 2 or 3 rings, which generally happens unless we're really, really busy. So again, there's just, I think right now, depending what statistic you look at, big banks control 70% of the deposits in the country and there's less than 5,000 banks. So, you know, community banks should be hunting these big banks. It's easier. You know, why hunt the neighbor in your town? There just isn't as much market share.
I hope you take this the right way. It feels like there's been a combination of lucky and good. I mean, is that a fair thing to think about? I mean, we are a company that creates brands. The Incredible Foundation is amazing how that became your brand. Your love for mobile homes and just, again, I said at the outset, thinking differently. And those things were serendipitous in timing and whatnot. But I think without a culture, your leadership and this company-wide focus on what you're going to go do, you don't even execute on it. So is that a fair way to think about how you guys have had some of the successes as you continue this journey to be a really unique institution?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, some of it was very deliberate and some of it was just flat out being at the right place at the right time. I mean, there's no question about that. And, you know, you make your luck if you set yourself up to win. And I think that we knew that culture just drives strategy, but it also eats strategy. So we had to get our culture aligned before think about it. We changed from River Valley State Bank to Incredible Bank. We took a 50-year legacy brand and we changed it to Incredible Bank. It was a huge move and it scared us to death. And we really had to get our company ready and our culture ready before we did that. And, you know, there were some tough moves there with personnel and other things. But certainly, I think what's been fun is we take community banking on the road. So, you know, just because we're headquartered here in Wisconsin doesn't mean that we can't, you know, finance a home in Oklahoma. You know, they use concrete there as well. And those are the kind of things we kid around, you know, where people be like, oh my gosh, how do we do a house in Oklahoma? And I'm like, well, I don't know, is concrete made different there? So we just kind of have fun and get sarcastic with each other. And then some of that stuff just gets catchy. And I think people want to be around where the action is. And so, yeah, we have a little bit of the fire truck syndrome and that people want to know what's going on over here. But there are a lot of people that can't work here, Sean. We've hired some traditional bankers and we scare them to death. They quit really quickly.
Right. I think to back up, I think I often think about the definition of luck is timing and hard work. And then to your point, I mean, you guys know who you are and it's an opt-in mentality. And I think the tenure of your team is a testament to the right fit people really help you deliver. And then just one of the things I saw, and I know, although this national expansion, just thinking about your roots and with the when I think of it in the Midwest, and I don't know how many banks have a 15-acre farm, and just talk about like why you would do that and talk about the Incredible Bank Foundation. I think it just underscores what you're talking about with the culture you've developed at the bank.
Yeah. Our founder, Ron Nicholas, who's now 85 years old, he was a farmer before he was a banker. He's one of the largest green bean harvesters and planters of green beans across the country. And in the 80s, he bought the bank. So he's never lost his farming roots. And he started this, what he calls a garden, which I think when you get over 15 acres is no longer a garden. But he wanted to grow vegetables for the employees as a way to give back. And then the farm kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And he grew more vegetables than 300 employees could eat. So then we started donating them to food banks and we started delivering them. We actually have a delivery mechanism that sends them to all our branches. And to give you an idea, we're in rural America. So our most southern branch to northern branch are 6 hours away. So it's when the vegetables start growing, the Nicholas Farms deliver, which are our owners, deliver vegetables to all our branches. And then we distribute them to employees, customers, and then whatever's left over go to food banks. So imagine walking into an Incredible Bank branch and leaving with a dozen ears of sweet corn. I mean, that doesn't happen, right? So that's just kind of fun. That's how we get involved in the community. And then our Incredible Bank Foundation is a charitable organization that our owners donate over $500,000 a year into the foundation. And I'm trying to keep the balance up, but every year they spend every dollar. So it's more of a charitable giving fund, as I call it. And we give back to the communities we serve. You know, these deposits really started in the communities that we serve, and they should be recirculated in the communities we serve. So it's a lot of fun to be involved with, and our employees will volunteer at the farm and pick vegetables and deliver vegetables. And when you walk into a food bank, being a bank with bags of vegetables for people that you're helping, it's really a lot of fun. We'll actually have people come to the bank and say, "We heard you guys give vegetables here. We don't believe our neighbor."
They don't believe it.
So we're like, here's some cucumbers, man. Here you go, you know.
And by the way, I have 2 4-by-8-foot gardens that are an immense amount of work in my backyard. And so I'm here to qualify that I'm you're far beyond garden size. But also the fact that you do the things you do is, well, incredible. But also the fact of the amount of times you've said the word fun. You really have fun. You create and cultivate a culture of fun. You exude that to your customers, to your employees. How do you keep banking fun?
That's a great question, because banking by nature is boring. I've probably said that 3 times too. And, you know, I just was thinking, and our teams think about, you know, how can we make sure our employees are having a good time? Because it's not the most exciting work in the world. And there are less customers coming into our locations. I mean, that's just a fact. And so some of the people that we have are really social. You know, they're social monsters. So we do things like, okay, we pop popcorn. There's a bunch of banks that pop popcorn. But how many banks go out and deliver, you know, 100 bags of popcorn to businesses on a Wednesday? You walk in with 100 bags of popcorn. People are like, well, what's the deal? We're just bringing you popcorn. So we just try to have fun. One of the other unique things that we did, because we're always trying to tell people to deliver a concierge experience, which is something that someone's not expecting. One of our bank managers put Freezy Pops through the tubes, you know, in the drive-thru. So I'm like, wow, that was interesting. He said, well, it was a really hot day. It didn't work out real good though, Todd, because they started to melt and then the tube got stuck. I'm like, well, you know, it was a cool idea. We have this thing called the Sunshine Award. So we sent them a nice card with $100.
Todd, now we know why we're helping you rethink the drive-up experience. It's because your Freezy Pops have ruined all your pneumatic tubes.
That's exactly right. But, you know, I think you have to be empowered to do stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, we're a very serious organization because we're taking care of people's money. But also, we're in the customer service business and we need to make people's day. And I think in order to do that, you have to be positive. And some days people come to work and they just don't feel positive. So if we can all laugh a little bit and have some fun, there's no reason why you can't have fun at work.
You know, I think I'm trying to think of somebody you remind me of in terms of a company, and I have to leave the financial sector. I mean, maybe a Nordstrom's comes to mind, you know, someone who famously doesn't have a return policy. I mean, in Nordstrom, one of their big successes is an intentional focus on the customer, but there's also just an amazing empowerment of the employee. I mean, is that a part of what you do to make this company wide? Is you lead people by example, but you must empower people to live this brand. And it's a living, breathing thing for your organization.
Yes. And what we learned is, you know, we do have a charitable foundation, but what we learned is, and that becomes formalized and you have to apply for the dollars and so on and so forth. But then, you know, we've got these branches in a widespread geography. And so we said, hey, we have to start giving like $5,000 to each branch and let that market manager donate that money in their communities the way they want to do it. How would we know down here, you know, at corporate who we should donate to in their community? So we learned that, Sean. We also learned same thing with sponsorship dollars, that even though we have a nice, awesome, centralized, cool marketing department, that we may not know who to sponsor in a community 3 hours from here. So we give that market manager their own sponsorship budget, and they can do what they want as a part of Incredible Bank. Those are things we learned along the way. And then the employees are like, this is like the greatest thing in the world. Well, duh. Then all the employees in that community rally around it, and it becomes a much more significant event for the community and for the employees. And so generally, most of our foundation gifts we give, or we try to give, to organizations that our employees volunteer for. And, you know, that's, I think, how some of this empowerment happens.
your definition of down here at corporate, you're about the least corporate that I've experienced.
Todd, I think one thing our listeners would love your perspective on, we've actually had BM Technologies, which is a true fintech and someone that doesn't think they have everything they need to serve the banking market. They're thinking about partnerships as a way to collaborate to do banking. Many community organizations, and as you mentioned, there are thousands of them. The average size organization is still quite small in relationship to the monster players that have the unlimited budgets. But you're a little unfazed by this fintech, you know, push or invasion. I think largely it's based in your understanding of being a digital bank. But, you know, why would other community banks, why should they not shudder at the notion that fintechs are coming for all their business? How would you address that concern in talking to your constituents?
Thank you for that. First, I want to go on record. I'm a huge fan of fintechs. And if any fintechs wants a partnership, please call me. I wish I would have been the bank for Square. That's kind of a cool deal because I think it gave small businesses, micro businesses, a better product than the banks could come up with. So I'm a huge fan of fintechs. However, I agree, Sean, I don't think community banks should fear them, rather embrace their ideas because they're the innovators of the future of banking. And that's what consumers and small businesses want. So let's not buck momentum. Let's just join it. But when people say stuff like, well, are you fearful that the United States Postal Service is going to take over banking? I'm like, no, they can't even deliver my mail on time. Who would go there? I think community banks get fearful of some of these different challenger banks and fintechs. And unfortunately, what happened to a lot of digital banks, and there's not a lot written about it, is while they didn't fail during the pandemic, they didn't have that one-on-one capability of talking to customers. And a lot of people were panicking very quickly. And I think that's where community banks stepped up and were able to deploy a lot of people quickly to talk to customers. And that's why we grew deposits like we did. And that's why there was an exodus of large banks to the community bank sector. You know, these fintechs are basically technology companies looking to partner with banks and make our customer experience better. So I think it's something we should embrace, not fear, partner with, not try to shut down.
It is clear, very clear, that you believe in banking, which is, of course, the name of our podcast. Tell us why you believe in banking, Todd.
Yeah, I believe in banking because I think it is the center of every community, or it should be the center of every community. And if you're a bank serving the community, you're doing the right thing. And really, if you think about it, a bank is owned by the members of the community, and we're just lucky enough to have an FDIC signified institution to redistribute the dollars in the community. So to me, a perfect dream of banking is that, you know, we give a loan to a local apartment complex, and the tax bill might have been $1,000 on it when it's done. And once it's built, you know, the tax bill is $70,000, and some of that money helps build a park that others in the community can enjoy. So I think community banking has a long, long runway ahead of it. And I always believe, hey, there's less community banks than there ever was. That should make us more valuable, and we should be more important, and we should take that responsibility more serious and become more significant. And I believe most community banks are the leaders in their communities and leading by example through philanthropy, economic development, and really creating a robust economy.
Well, Todd, I said when I met you, you are a very unbank CEO, bank CEO. And I mean that with admiration, not that there's anything wrong with bank CEOs at all, but you are atypical and you're different in how you think about it. And I think that in those differences, there's a lot that the industry can learn about how they can apply some of the type of things that you've done, if that's right for their organizations, to what they're doing. And regardless of what anyone thinks about it, you have clearly been successful in your path, your atypical path to building Incredible Bank to the bold, beautiful brand that it is today, with a corresponding bold and beautiful promise to customers and communities. So we thank you sincerely for being on with us today.
Yeah, likewise, Gina. You know, if nothing else, people can learn about leadership, you know, passion about an organization. We believe in a lot about brand experience, you know, people really embodying a brand promise, being differentiated. And like you say, I mean, in a sea of sameness and the commoditization of banking, you guys have carved a unique path. And we just thank you. We wish you all the best in your journey and hope that we can help you continue to be successful.
Well, thanks to both of you, and I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you all today.
You've been listening to Believe in Banking, a podcast series created to empower decision makers, influencers, and industry leaders in financial services. Be sure to also join us on our flagship site, believeinbanking.com.